Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.
Thanks for joining me for another Blunt Business here on CannabisHero.com. Appreciate all of you joining us. Wherever you find the program, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube Music, Amazon Music, and other places. Appreciate you all joining us. So on the program here and on our grassroots marketing series, we have been extensively talking about various changes to hemp laws state by state. We also know that in the federal government, they're looking at the 2026 hemp bill, which was kick the can down the road, and now look at a consideration of a hemp loophole. And one of those considerations that all these have in common is to take out of the all psychoactive uses of the hemp plant. So to keep it only for industrial uses, eliminating Delta 8, 9, or 10, and various other THC uses, or the components of the THC to be making, deriving THC from the hemp plant. I could use a better way of explaining it, but I'll let my guest go talk about that because he's obviously well-read and really following along with this. He's been on our grassroots marketing program a couple of times, and now we've elevated him to the blunt business because this is such a large subject to go ahead and tackle. And we can go through various states on this and see what has happened so far. We'll just kind of like put the scoreboard up and see what states have already passed laws and who are trying to pass laws and where the federal government's going to try to go with this. Well, so I'm here with the founder, Chief Communications Officer of Cornbread Hemp. He's the author of The Cornbread Mafia, A Homegrown Syndicate's Code of Silence, and The Biggest Marijuana Bust in American History, Jim Higdon. Jim, thanks for being back on with us, and thanks for joining me here on Blunt Business.
All right, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. So we're looking at various issues now. We're going to focus, first of all, when it comes to the state of Florida. And okay, the talk is now about, let me just make sure I get this here, that there is pending legislation that could wipe out Florida's hemp industry, threatening local jobs and small businesses. So a minibus appropriations bill that's being brought up now, once the government reopens, as we're still in the government shutdown right now federally, as we're recording this, now in this third week, congressional leadership is looking at a bill that it would eliminate hemp-derived THC products nationwide, putting at risk an industry worth $28.4 billion. Now, Cornbread Hemp, based in Louisville, Kentucky, named by Inc. 500 as America's fastest-growing hemp company. You're also, Jim, a board member of the U.S. Hemp Roundtable and former cannabis policy journalist for the Washington Post and Politico, just to give the extra resume in there. Now, when it comes to what you said about this, we also got to look at the fact that Florida's congressional delegation is also looking to go ahead and defend their state's hemp economies. Now, you said, quote, that when the government reopens, the plan from congressional leadership is to move immediately to a minibus appropriations conference committee. The language would include to eliminate the entire hemp industry with a ban of hemp-derived THC. This proposal would outlaw hemp-derived products that have never received hearings, markups, or votes. It is far too consequential to be decided in recent negotiations, or secret negotiations. The American hemp industry deserves transparency and due process, and not elimination by procedural ambush. But we're getting ambushed on all levels, state and federal. Tell me what you've been seeing about this in this year, and you know, what's the chance that we're going to see this bill or something to change the landscape of hemp overall?
Right. So it's a critical point. It's really we're at an inflection point in our all collective efforts to legalize, normalize, deschedule cannabis nationally, federally, once and for all. We've all been poking around, chipping away at various sides of it with, you know, medical marijuana, adult use marijuana, and the hemp industry have all been doing our own parts to, you know, normalize the cannabis industry and to push against our opponents at the federal level to get something done once and for all, irrevocable positive change towards descheduled cannabis. And right now, during the government shutdown, we are on the brink of real progress here, but it is by no means a done deal, and it, you know, nothing is done until it's done. But the way I understand things now, you know, going into the end of October, the government shutdown is going to last into November. Some people were saying, you know, as far as Thanksgiving. So we have some, you know, that, and that's terrible and bad for the country. But in terms of advocating for legalizing THC at the federal level once and for all, the delay in the shutdown gives us the opportunity to continue to press lawmakers on this topic. So for people in Florida who are eager to, you know, get something across the finish line, the people, Florida is in a uniquely good position. You have three members of the Florida congressional delegation on the conference committee, this minibus bill that you're talking about. Yes. The minibus is three appropriations bills, including agriculture. And agriculture is what we're talking about here with this THC cap or THC limitation that's going to be in it relative to what's going to happen in the appropriation bill. And you know, like, you know, you mentioned it yourself, a lot of people were talking about loopholes and whether hemp exists in a loophole or whether some of the hemp economy exists outside of the loophole in under the plain language of the bill, and whether other parts are loophole type industry that you know, could be closed, and by which I mean, a credible argument could be made that Delta 8 is a loophole product, while Delta 9 hemp products are not loophole products if they're under that 0.3%.
Now, the thing is, states have tried to go ahead and get this passed. Some have not. So in Florida, it did not. House Bill 7027. And the idea was, again, comprehensive framework, regulating hemp and consumable THC. They were going to put limitations, age restrictions to 21, new penalties for violations, and outline requirements for product testing by independent laboratories. This is the standard protocol that all these other bills have gone along, but we're now at the point where House and Senate cannot reconcile differences before the legislative calendar, so dropped. So at least here now.
And we'll get back to that in Tallahassee next session, and it's very important to get that clarity. And it's also important, and thank you for bringing this up, that hemp interests and marijuana interests in Florida learn to sing kumbaya together. We're all in this together. We should see each other as competitors. Hemp customers, hemp beverage customers are very different than dispensary customers. And, rising tide lifts all boats. And so, it's important for hemp operators in Florida to, be seen as allies and advocates for, getting adult use passed in Florida once and for all as well. Just as we in the hemp industry are asking our friends in the cannabis industry to not, beat us up too badly in Tallahassee as we try to get good regulations for hemp products, especially hemp beverages in retail.
But, I want to go ahead and just table real quick. And I want to just go and fall back up right there when it comes to cannabis legalization of Florida, because the adult use, there is a telling sign about, even though the amendment for cannabis being adult use in Florida did not reach the 2/3 level, I think there was a strong signal sent that 60% did get to yes. And I think we're seeing some of the ramifications of that, because we see that the ballot initiative is going to be put back up on the next ballot for 2026. It won't pass because it's not a presidential election. There's not enough turnout for it. But, I mean, who knows? I mean, we don't have an abortion bill that was also at the same time that took away from the advertising. And also, if, organizations like Smart and Safe Florida will actually put more time into putting better marketing and better advertising than the last time around, because I think they missed the boat. And I wanted to talk to those folks. We never got a chance to get them on, but I made the reach out for them and they never got back to me. That's okay. But the other thing, too, is that interesting story I saw that came from state of Florida is that an appeals court ruling that the plain smell of cannabis is no longer enough to establish probable cause. That's fascinating. I can't tell you how many body cam videos I've seen on YouTube that have always been the case for anybody to go ahead and get pulled over on a traffic stop and say, okay, I smell marijuana, and bam, here we go. So the Tallahassee station, I think it's CBS affiliate, WCTV, actually mentioned that this is from 3 weeks ago, early in October, Second District Court of Appeal said that due to legislative changes over the years, that the legalization of medical marijuana hemp, the plain smell of doctrine no longer applies independently. So I want to get your take on that. That's a pretty big win for Florida residents.
100%. So, you know, what we're seeing here is another good example of the prohibition structure that has, perpetuated the war on drugs, breaking down piece by piece, state by state. And, some law enforcement are proactive and good on this issue, and other law enforcement organizations are particularly bad on this issue. The smell of marijuana to justify search and seizure of property, vehicles, even coming into your house or other private property, has been used by law enforcement for decades to violate the Fourth Amendment rights against the unreasonable search and seizure for Americans of every color and economic class. And so this is a great step in the right direction, where the courts in Florida are recognizing that the smell of cannabis is no longer directly associated with committing a crime, because the smell of cannabis is legal, and the smell of cannabis is not a crime, and nor is it indicative of a crime taking place. And so therefore, law enforcement should not be able to ask you to open the trunk.
I mean, smell out everywhere anyway. I mean, the odor is out there. I mean, I don't think it makes much of a difference anymore, because I know people are, let's just say that you also just can tell, you can just see a lot of people that are out there that, when I'm around the state of Florida right now, just where I live here in West Palm Beach, I can come around people and they have the wafting smell of cannabis on them because they just not done smoking, or, whatever it is, that's just going to be a normal way of life. It's just there.
Yeah, it's the smell of freedom is what I like to tell folks, because, a lot of people outside of our community who are not cannabis users, in the square, regular, mainstream world, find the smell of outdoor cannabis smoke obnoxious and just distasteful, and they wish it were not happening. And some people have gone so far as to say out loud in public that the smell of cannabis smoke in public is a reason for it to remain illegal, as if it's the law enforcement's requirement to go arrest people who are creating that smell. And so it remains a challenge on a policy front, the quote nuisance unquote of the smell of cannabis smoke for some people. But it's to your point, ubiquitous. It's something that we are all going to have to get used to. If it's legal for someone to be smoking a cigar in public, then someone should be able to smoke cannabis in public. It's just the same thing. People should have discretion and, do it where they're going to offend the fewest amount of people. That's just part of life these days.
Before we go to break, I want to talk about one more thing when it comes to Florida. There's been talk where hemp companies are asking for cracking down on packaging, because there is still the issue about, you have a lot of vape shops, smoke shops out there selling kratom or, whatever the synthetics that are out there as well. And the Florida Department of Agriculture and Community Services, they're proposing a state definition of what can be considered a cartoon on packaging for hemp products. I know there was a crackdown on products that look like, basically children's, like either candies or cereals or things like that. We had that issue also keep thinking out. And that's the problem where, at the same time, we want hemp to going to be legalized. We want to have, a framework, like you just said, that people can go and follow. But at the same time, you also got to crack down on the illicit market and the market of people that are just being, onerous and disingenuous of what they're doing. So the new language would be defining a cartoon as any the drawing or other depiction of an object, person, animal, creature, or any similar caricature using comically exaggerated features. All of that would be put in. They think that would be something that could help take away some of the nefarious packaging out there of various hemp products. Does this go far enough?
It's a tricky thing, because it's clear that these knockoff candy packaging designed to either market to, youth, young people, or just, young adults who, think it's funny that a package looks like candy, but is actually a weed product. It's difficult to know, but either in any case, it's caused a real policy headache for folks trying to do things the right way. And that needs to end. But the way that the legislators are going about trying to define attractive to children in a way that does not infringe on First Amendment rights is a precarious one. And, you know, for instance, there's brands in the hemp beverage space now who have logos that, you know, are not intended to be marketing towards children, but could run afoul of a definition of a cartoon if it's written too broadly. You know, Cornbread Hemp, for instance, our you know, I was just speaking for our own packaging. We have illustrations on our cans of our beverages in the in the shapes and colors of fruit.
Right.
Now, they're not photorealistic. They're illustrations. They're not cartoons because they're not like eyes and mouths and like arms and legs on the peaches. So they're not cartoons. But you know, like it should not be up to the you know Florida Department of Agriculture to determine you know what's in and out. We like this is one reason why we need to get some legislation passed through Tallahassee that you know makes parent groups and concerned legislators comfortable that we are preventing the worst of it without going so far as to get, you know, just regular good meaning, you know, good faith packaging taken off the shelf because it doesn't meet some strict standard that the good people at the Florida Department of Agriculture decide runs afoul of a standard that hasn't been passed by legislature. So, you know, understanding that's probably the conversation we'll be having in Tallahassee next year, what is attractive to children and not. And if you're going to apply it to hemp THC beverages, like, you know, are we also applying it to craft beer, wine, and spirits? Because there's lots of animals and cartoon images on various alcohol products that are on the shelf in Florida right now. And I'd hate for there to be a double standard.
We're going to expand our look outside of the state of Florida and look at the other states that are trying to do something similar that have tried to enact or are looking to enact and have enacted. We're going to go into all that and more. And then we'll also look at the federal level and see what they're going to be doing with that. Here, once again, with Jim Higdon, co-founder, chief communications officer at Cornbread Hemp, and author of The Cornbread Mafia, Homegrown, Sin Against Code of Silence, and The Biggest Marijuana Bust in American History. Back with Jim and more questions after this. Welcome back to Blunt Business. I'm here with Jim Higdon, co-founder, chief communications officer at Cornbread Hemp. And I want to move along into what the other states have been doing. So there's been the push to restrict sale of intoxicating hemp-derived cannabinoids like Delta 8, Delta 10, and high THC Delta 9 products that's been trending across the U.S., especially in the South. So many states have either passed legislation or actively working on bills sharing the same goals that Florida was trying to do with the new laws, essentially restricting youth access, ensuring product safety, limiting potency. So the other states we also have in the mix, we also make a mention of as well. First of all is Ohio. Governor DeWine there, Mike DeWine, issuing executive orders to temporarily ban the sale of intoxicating hemp, defining as a product with more than 0.5 THC per serving or 2 milligrams. So executive order does not, can't just permanently stay in play, but the fact that executive order was dropped in here, and lawmakers still trying to debate bills that would either ban or required to be sold in licensed dispensaries. Louisiana already now has an effective law and was passed January 1st. So potency from 8 milligrams to 5 milligrams, banned sales at gas stations, raising the price, the purchase age to 21. Texas proposed and attempted, and we've been talking about that quite a bit here on the program, with a number of people, operators that were in the space, and they've been debating the past bills that would impose tight restrictions. I think, what was it, the House, I think, passed something, and the Senate could not. I'm not sure. I can't remember what it was, the whole story about that. California is also working on emergency regulations permanent to bring intoxicating hemp products under the state's highly regulated cannabis framework, banning retail sale of hemp food, beverage, and dietary products containing any detectable THC outside of licensed cannabis channels. The other thing, too, is that it's the cracking down on hemp and not cannabis, because cannabis is getting more favorable status, I feel like, on the state and federal levels, and hemp is not. But again, we can talk about the fact that there are universal standards in every other industry in place, that the hemp industry could follow. And for the fact that the FDA, from a federal level, never decided to go and put that in place, or just say, okay, cosmetics of 1930, enforce under that, DEA, whatever it is, they should do that. Also, proposals were being done in Missouri, among other states. But the thing is, it comes down to the fact that some of these states are going as they get to order emergency powers before they get the bills passed. So there's a lot of push to go after hemp. But meanwhile, there's a lot of times where we see cannabis not getting that kind of front.
And California is the exact opposite, right? Not only do you have like the most robust adult use cannabis market in the country, if not the world, like, you know, Los Angeles is the world's capital adult use cannabis market. You also have a wine manufacturing industry that is suffering in sales because of competition. It feels from hemp beverages. So the combined 1-2 punch of an entrenched cannabis stakeholders and wine manufacturing stakeholders in a state whose governor owns wineries and whose assemblywoman who passed the hemp ban bill represents Napa County, just goes to show what the hemp industry was up against in California, similar to what we were facing here in Kentucky with the bourbon industry, but even stronger because there was a 1-2 punch between cannabis and the wine industry. Whereas in Texas, you have neither of those. You don't have an entrenched wine, beer, or spirits manufacturing interest, nor do you have cannabis. And so the hemp market was allowed to exist in Texas because the governor, after trying to get something through the legislature, just issued an executive order saying, okay, make it 21 and over. Here's some testing requirements, and we'll deal with it next session. And that's really notable because in Texas, there is no legislative session next year. So these are the rules we'll get in Texas for the next year and a half. And, you know, other states where this is playing out with entrenched cannabis interests, making it difficult for hemp, or places like Arkansas that have outlawed hemp entirely. And for that matter, Alaska, Montana, where small states, rural states with medical with adult or medical programs, in some cases adult use, but in Arkansas, just a medical marijuana program, were able to outlaw hemp entirely. And that's also something that's happening in Missouri. Missouri is a difficult state for hemp because there is a adult use cannabis market in Missouri, as well as corporate beer manufacturing interests with Anheuser-Busch. And so, again, 1-2 punch. Some going to make Missouri a difficult legislative session for us next year. But what's happening in Ohio right now as we talk is really fascinating. Again, an adult use cannabis state in Ohio with no alcohol manufacturing of any significance. So that's the dynamics at play in Ohio, with a strong prohibition element in the elder wing of the Republican Party in Ohio. Ohio is interesting in that it passed both medical marijuana and adult use marijuana through voter referendum. No legislator in leadership in Columbus wanted either one of those things to happen, but voter referenda got it done. Similar to Florida, except, you know, they just need a bare minimum 50% vote, not the 60% threshold you need in Florida. Legislative leadership, the governor doesn't really want marijuana to be legal in Ohio, but they don't really have a choice. And now the hemp industry is disrupting all of that again, which brings us to Governor DeWine attempting to ban hemp at this point 2 weeks ago. And then last week, a judge ruled that executive order was unconstitutional under the state constitution because he's inventing definitions not defined by the legislature. And now we're seeing a bill move, a compromise bill move in the legislature in Columbus today. Probably we'll get a vote in committee tomorrow. And so we're looking at a fast track compromise bill coming through Ohio right now that clearly shows that prohibitionists attempted to stop this and failed, and that we're getting 5-10 milligrams in hemp beverages in Ohio.
So I want to make this point clear to the audience and also for those politicians and those people that might be listening to this program. So as I've said on this program, and I might be not perfectly accurate when I say this, but I've referred to the Cosmetics Act of the 1930s. It's the 1930s, okay, that decade. And more specifically, I'm referring to the Federal Food and Drug and Cosmetics Act of 1938, the FFDCA, governs cosmetics, food, and drugs. And it would be, I think, would be the right standard that every state or federal government could actually institute right now as law. And that would take away all the issues of the hemp crack that they're trying to go and do. If people would just follow this framework, I think this would be the answer. I don't know why this doesn't get put out there as one simple answer. It's been there since 1938. Let me just make the point of the similarities, Jim. So mandatory testing, certificate of analysis. Now, there's already been a prohibition of adulteration, the sale of food or drugs that are injurious to health or contain unsafe ingredients. That's already been a concept that's been put together by the principle of the FFDCA. Regulation when it comes to prohibition of certain color food additives. It was always mentioned that there's a pre-market approval required or generally recognized as safe designation for additives. Same thing would be done here. Child-resistant packaging. There's always been a Poison Prevention Packaging Act that was put in place in 1970, separate of the FFDCA, which has been administered closely and conceptually related to the mission of public safety. And then marketing and packaging bans. The FFDCA has a prohibition of misbranding. When it comes to accurate labeling of THC, CBD, or serving size, there's been a mandatory ingredient or nutritional labeling that's also been put into place to clearly and accurately list all ingredients and relevant information. Bingo. That's the answer to everything. Why is it that do politicians need to be paid more or do the lobbyists need to go and get this information? Why isn't this lowly person on this blunt business program doing here for thousands of listeners? Why is it I have to be the one to put this all together and tell you, Jim? I'm sure this does make sense, right?
It would certainly be better if the world existed in a world where logic and reasoning would dictate policy, but that is not always the case. And so the way
we put this together with you on this right here, and I've said this over and over, but it's like, this is all falling on deaf ears. And I know there's some corruption behind this. I'm pretty sure of that. I'm sure there's other reasons why it's being done. Or just some ignorance or, you know, lack of knowledge or wisdom of what's going on here, because I see this happen too much. This is,
we're all like, hemp exists in an unregulated market because the FDA refuses to regulate it. Congress legalized it. FDA has refused to regulate it. That's the world we're living in. The FDA is doing that for one particular reason. It wants a proactive authority to regulate all cannabis products in the future. And it feels like it does not have that authority under the existing authorities that's been granted by Congress, whether through the Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act, as you point out, or the Dietary Supplement Health Act, Health and Safety Act, whatever that is, DSHEA, I think the 90s, the Dietary Supplement Act added to Food, Drug, and Cosmetic Act. We feel like FDA has regulatory authority under DSHEA to regulate at least full spectrum CBD with modest amounts of THC in them under its existing authority before it gets full authority over all cannabis. But that is not the FDA's position, even under the current administration. So on the other side of this shutdown and the minibus appropriations bill that we're dealing with to determine how much THC is going to be legal under federal law going forward, we're also going to have to pass a bill through the House Energy and Commerce Committee to grant to FDA authority to regulate these products. That's the only way forward. And it's going to be the only way forward to lay the groundwork of tracks to deschedule cannabis in a way. You know, folks in the cannabis industry are really focused on descheduling, rescheduling. And don't really have a concept of what's on the other side of a descheduled cannabis. And what happens on the other side of descheduling is we have to get regulation. And that's what the hemp industry is fighting for now and laying the groundwork for descheduled cannabis in the future is, you know, what we've shown is that the getting regulations for these products is just as hard as getting them descheduled and legalized by Congress. And with descheduling, we need the FDA to step in and regulate these products, and we have to get Congress to grant FDA that authority. Because the FDA, while there is competing interests from competing stakeholders, and critics could refer to that as corruption, there are good people at FDA trying to keep the general health of the public, you know, safe. And releasing cannabinoids into the wild at scale gives a lot of people concern there. And we want to make sure that we're moving forward with appropriate guardrails to reduce the chances of things going bad or creating larger scale public health concerns than we anticipated by breaking down the walls of prohibition. So we need regulation. We got to get it. We have to get Congress to force FDA to make it happen. And this administration with this Secretary of Health and Human Services is the best opportunity we have had to get that done, because a lot of status quo, things that we've always thought would always be true have fallen by the wayside. And so it's a fluid situation in many branches of government, and now is an opportunity to ride that wave.
Yeah. So, I mean, at the moment, we're worrying about the fact that since 2019, I've been talking about this. I remember when I had the folks at the U.S. Hemp Roundtable doing a discussion about the hemp bill for 2018 at that time. Scott Gottlieb was, at the helm. Did nothing. Kicked the can down the road. Oh, public comment. We're going to just go ahead and keep, working on trying to figure out things here. We don't have enough information to go by. Stephen Hahn, nothing happened. Robert Califf, nothing happened. Marty McCary, under the auspices of the current HHS Secretary, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. I guess that would be something that's like not in the top priority yet, but I know that's going to be something that probably be addressed somewhere in this administration's term. I would hope so. And then we'll get to a certain point and say, okay, we're going to finally address this here. And I think once the hemp bill comes into play, maybe we'll finally get some kind of intervention. I don't know, but that's where we're at right now, that the FDA has not wanted to do a thing. I'll just say it could be as simple as this. You want to make your job easy? Take the Federal Food and Cosmetics Act of 1938. Just drop that in. Say we're going to start enforcing it now. Okay, I think some people could play ball with that. And you want to make some tweaks to it? Make it into the hemp bill coming up so that there are certain other additions or whatever kind of revisions need to be made. But make the point that the hemp bill, when it's brought in, does that. And not some hemp loophole they're going to be talking about, which we're going to address after the break. We're going to come back to that. But before I do that, I want to give you the final word on this part about, if the industry, you would think as a whole, would be satisfied if the FFDCA was enforced and just said, okay, we're going to take this existing law, we're going to enforce it here.
Yeah. I mean, this is, we've got to get this over the hump at the federal level. This is what this is all about. And right now there is a small group of members of Congress, and it's actually kind of a large group. It's like 35 members of Congress have been appointed to this conference committee. And these people are going to be the people who decide this thing once and for all. So, I was just looking up who those are in Florida, because in Florida, there's three members of Congress on this conference committee that provides the last best hope for getting THC legalized under federal law. And the first one on the Democratic side is Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Wow. She's a well-known member of the Florida congressional delegation. Her district is down there in suburban Miami-Dade. She's a Democrat, obviously, and she should therefore be a layup for our issue, but she is not. Her voting record has not been stellar on our issue, and so needs some, convincing from members of her district to talk to her about the importance of this issue.
She's served a long time in Congress too. Let's make that point clear too.
She has a significant tenure, which is neither here nor there. In this case, it's a good thing that she's close to leadership and on this issue. But on this issue, she could be better and needs to hear from her constituents. And on the Republican side in Florida is John Rutherford and Scott Franklin. These guys are less familiar to me. What can you tell me about Rutherford and Franklin?
If they are in the state of Florida. There must be from Central or North Florida. I have not heard of them.
Yeah, one of the is, I think he's in St. Pete.
Yeah.
And the other one is kind of between Tampa and Orlando, maybe.
Yeah.
These guys are very important on this conference committee. And so if they're familiar with any of your listeners in Florida, they need to hear from you, you know, right away.
Agreed. Well, and like I said, with the state of Florida, at least we didn't get to the point where if we would have gotten the amendment done, things would have moved farther. I think some of the changes they're trying to make in terms of cracking down on various issues when it comes to hemp and the products I want to get rid of. I mean, there is the thing where we need to go and have a crackdown on illicit products. And for some of these other products that are synthetic that are just not based on anything that's, you know, organically grown, that's just being synthetically created and not synthetically created from anything else, but, you know, hemp or from cannabis, that's a different story, which I am totally in favor of. I want that to go in. I want the bad actors and some of those bad products off the shelves, because there's some that are, without giving names, I don't want to go and see out here that are not beneficial, not there's just no health value to it, and it's just not helping people. So just not at all. We're going to come back and talk about the hemp loophole when it comes to the federal government and wrap things up with Jim Higdon here, the co-founder and chief communications officer at Cornbread Hemp. And back with final questions after this. I'm back once again. Final questions with Jim Higdon, co-founder, chief communications officer at Cornbread Hemp. By the way, pretty easy to go and find the website, cornbreadhemp.com, cornbreadhemp.com. Also, look for his book, The Cornbread Mafia, A Homegrown Syndicate's Code of Silence and the Biggest Marijuana Bust in American History. Of course, you can find it in all major bookstores, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I'm pretty sure all have it somewhere. You can go and get your hands on it. So finally, the federal loophole that we've been looking at right now when it comes to the changes that are going to be possibly made. Let's get back into that part, because the current law shows that they want to have a limitation of what? Under 0.3% Delta-9 THC. The stricter definition would be a 0.3 total THC, including the psychoactive potential THC, which means it would just basically relegate most of the products, not possible. And if it did, the market would fundamentally change, making the most high THC hemp flower and many Delta-8 products federally illegal. Now, we know that the states have been doing their own crackdowns on various Delta 8, Delta 9, Delta 10 products. Understood. But is the addressing of the legality and potency of intoxicating hemp products having a broader impact than the state-level changes? But so far, no final federal law hasn't passed to close the loophole. But I know that I want to say the Kentucky Senator Rand Paul has been one of those people that have been in the forefront of putting that loophole in place, correct?
Well, I wouldn't say he put it in place.
Or he's not in support of it.
He's been supported. Well, first of all, you know, we disagree with astute scholars of Senate policy like Senator Mitch McConnell, who accuse all hemp companies of operating in a loophole when he's the author of the language in which we operate. It's our firmly held position that products that have Delta-9 THC below 0.3 are not operating in a loophole, but in fact operating under the plain language of the law in good faith. Loophole products could be defined as, you know, Delta-8 and other non-Delta-9 THCs because they're not defined in Congress and therefore not bound by that 0.3%. Restraint THCA flower might also be considered a loophole product, given that it also is outside of that Delta-9 standard. A compromise that could restrict THC from a Delta-9 THC standard to a total THC standard where all THCs must be under that 0.3%. Determinant in order to be declared legal hemp, could be something that we see as a compromise at the federal level. And, that would end THCA flower as we know it. It would also, drastically reduce but not eliminate Delta-8, because Delta-8 and those other forms of THC could exist in that 0.3% standard, which is where We operate with the Delta 9 standard with cornbread hemp. Like we, you know, we're putting 10 milligrams of Delta 9 THC per serving in gummies, using that strict standard of 0.3% Delta 9 THC by weight. So, you know, moving to a total THC standard could be, you know, where Congress decides to land that plane, and it will disrupt the hemp industry, and there will be some hemp product manufacturers significantly impacted by that, and other hemp product manufacturers will not be. You know, hemp product manufacturers that are operating under the plain language of the law of 0.3% Delta 9 THC, if it's moved to total THC, will not be affected by it. We've talked to our farming partners about that to make sure a total THC standard would not disrupt the farming side of our operations. And our farmers tell us they're already held to a total THC standard by the USDA. So that could be very well something that we see down the road. It could provide some comfort with marijuana operators to have some clarity on who's allowed to sell flower and who isn't. But we have friends in the hemp industry who, you know, grow good THCA flower. And so we're not, you know, in a position to, you know, see them get edged out if they don't have to be. So, you know, this is, you know, it's a dynamic situation that we're dealing with now, where we want to make sure that, you know, responsible hemp operators are protected, however we can do that.
There we go. Let's go and talk about cornbread hemp. Cornbreadhemp.com. And on the website, if you go there now, you're going to see there are some seasonal seltzers out there at 10 milligrams THC, where you have various new seasonal flavors, raspberry, limeade, peach, salted watermelon. I have not heard that flavor before. And also blueberry breeze. So tell me through some of the new seltzers you have out here for product and you know, what we got in line for people as the holiday season approaches.
Right. So we just launched Cornbread, made our bones, like became a national brand on our USDA certified organic gummies. First, full spectrum CBD gummies and then THC gummies. We make the world's only USDA certified organic THC gummy. We're very proud of it. It comes in three flavors now. We're about to launch a THC sleep gummy around the corner. Nice. And then earlier this year, we joined the beverage boom with our own beverage line. Those four flavors that you just mentioned, and the sales and distribution footprint of Cornbread continues to grow at a rapid pace. I believe we're at 12 states and growing on the distribution side, something like that. It's been a real wild ride these last few months. Just as you said, we've launched 10 milligram beverages. We started with five because, you know, that's the step in dosage, and that's where we are restricted currently in Kentucky. We're capped at 5 milligrams per 12 ounces. So we've launched 10s available in distribution and direct to consumer online sales for every state where that's legal. And right now that's most states. We can ship 10 milligram THC seltzers to most states. And this is a non-exhaustive no list, but Kentucky, Utah, Alabama, Montana. There's some states where we can't ship them, but otherwise, Florida, and all places where you can get hemp beverages, they're certainly available. And for folks who are looking for drinks that's not over sugared and refreshing, like a seltzer, who moved away from soda and started drinking Spindrifts and Waterloos, that's where we really kind of formulated our beverages to be. They're light and chemical taster, aftertaste, undertaste. We've taken a lot of care in the product. And so, you know, we've been recognized as award-winning on the tens, and we're really, you know, excited to share them with the world.
Fantastic. Go ahead. We have been here again with Jim Higdon, co-founder and chief communications officer at Cornbread Hemp. One more time, cornbreadhemp.com, cornbreadhemp.com. And Jim, really appreciate you talking to me about all this here when it comes to the federal state levels of hemp bills and what they're trying to do with it. And hopefully we're going to get some resolution overall. We're going to help and pray for it. Thank you again for being on, Jim.
Jorge, thanks for having me. We're going to get there. We'll see you on the other side of it.
Sounds good. And thank you, listeners, for listening to The Blunt Business. We'll talk to you next time.
Hey guys, finding the perfect gift for the food lover in your life is easy. Thanks to Goldbelly. Goldbelly ships America's most iconic foods straight from world-famous restaurants right to your door. So if you want to treat someone to Joe's Stone Crab from Miami, Franklin Barbecue from Texas, or desserts from famous foodies like Ina Garten or Martha Stewart, Goldbelly has you covered with free shipping anywhere in the country. Just go to goldbelly.com and for a limited time, get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's promo code GIFT.